No matter how far, this is the prayer of my heart. So now I give you my life. So you'll use me, through me. Your name will be blessed. I wanna give it, give it. For you, nothing less. Don't wanna hide. I decided to give you my best. You make me feel loved. Feel loved. I am not ashamed. I am not afraid. Fearless I've been made. I'll never be the same.
If you like to talk to tomatoes, have we got a show for you.
VeggieTales Rockin' Tour Live, Saturday, August 27th, 3 p.m., live on stage at Cox Arena. Don't miss this opportunity for your children to sing, dance, and laugh with Bob and Larry live on stage. Join Bob and Larry and some of their closest friends as they perform their greatest hits in concert. Presents VeggieTales is coming to rock your town.
Everybody's got a water buffalo.
Something so silly.
With surprise guests, lots of silliness, and all of your favorite veggie songs. Saturday, August 27th, 3 p.m. at Cox Arena. Tickets are on sale this Monday morning at 10 at the box office, Ticketmaster, at HOV.com, or charge at 619-220-TIXS. With discounts available, please call 619-671-3520 for more info. Produced by House of Blues Concerts.
KPRZ.
KPRZ.
San Diego. 1210 AM, KPRZ, San Marcos, Poway, San Diego, a service of Salem Communications Corporation.
The Bob Siegel Show is made possible in part by ProBuild, Prime Time Advertising Corporation, Web Studio, W&S Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent KPRZ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. Welcome to the program that defends Christianity intellectually, morally, and yes, even politically. Oh, I know, some of you don't think the word Christian and the word politics should be used in the same breath. Well, relax. I can assure you that nobody is here to take away your civil liberties. If you'd rather not be a Christian, if you'd rather believe you evolved randomly from a single-celled amoeba, if you hate hymns, well, actually, I'm kind of with you on some of those hymns. If you find other religions superior, if you'd rather stretch out your hands and empty your mind to become one with the universe than attend some church's Wednesday night potluck, if your religious belief teaches that it's holier to stand on your head than decorate a Christmas tree this December, who's stopping you? Nobody is. Not one person, not one church, not one single law. If you're walking through a public park during the Christmas season and you see the figures of some shepherds and angels surrounding a mother and her baby, it doesn't mean the Gestapo will be at your door tomorrow. Honestly, people, let's chill out. I know Christians can be tactless at times. I know they can say stupid things, so ignore them. I'm a Christian now, but for the first 20 years of my life, I was not a Christian. I didn't even believe in any kind of God at all during most of that time. But you know something? Christmas decorations didn't disturb me. People wearing crosses around their necks did not bother me. Crosses like the big cross on Mount Soledad here in San Diego were just decorations to me. I didn't feel persecuted when somebody smiled at me and said Merry Christmas or Happy Easter or gasp, Jesus loves you. And if some overzealous soul tried to share the gospel with me and I didn't want to listen, you know what I did? I told him I wasn't interested. Pretty original, huh? I didn't need to sue him. I didn't need to call the ACLU. I just said I'm not interested. If he kept on talking, I walked away. It wasn't hard. It wasn't rocket science. But hey, that's just me. Maybe your experience has been different. If you do think the cross on Mount Soledad is a problem, or that Christmas decorations are a threat, or if you're thinking more generally this summer that Christianity itself is trying to take over the country at gunpoint, if you're afraid you'll be marched at gunpoint and forced to sing Silent Night in December and Amazing Grace in April or Kumbaya at any time, then keep on listening because we have a fascinating guest today. Or maybe you are a Christian and you feel quite the reverse. You as a Christian feel that your liberties, your rights of expression are being violated today. Hang around, folks. Hang around. How do I introduce today's guest? Many of you have already heard of David Barton. But even if you haven't heard of him, I'll bet you've seen him on TV, especially if you're a channel surfer like me. You're flipping through those channels and sooner or later, you see this guy in a coat and tie with a library of books behind him, talking fast-paced and enthusiastically about the true intentions of our forefathers as far as Christianity is concerned. David Barton is an author and historian. I read his book, Original Intent, and I'm telling you it should be required reading in every public school. No, we don't have to require people to become Christians, but they should be required to read this book just to know what the real history of our country was, this country that they live in, incidentally. David is also the founder and president of Wall Builders, a national pro-family organization which distributes historical, legal, and statistical information and helps citizens become active in their local schools and communities. David specializes in researching the original writings from the founding era. He serves as a consultant to state and federal legislators. He's participated in several cases at the Supreme Court and was involved in the development of the history social studies standards for both Texas and California students. David Barton is a recipient of many awards, including Who's Who in Education, the George Washington Honor Medal, and he has an honorary doctorate of letters from Pensacola Christian College. David Barton, thank you so much for coming on our program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be with you.
It is an honor. I enjoyed your book thoroughly, and I really enjoy your talking style. I believe just 100% in what you're doing, and we're so honored to have you. David, could you start by just telling us a little bit about your own Christian background? When did your faith become so important to you? Was it as a child, as a teenager, as an adult?
I'm pretty much like Timothy was in the scripture. I've been raised from my childhood knowing the faith, and it goes back to grandparents and great-grandparents, and my dad's a minister. He's also an engineer, and so he was bivocational pastor of the church. So pretty much from my youth, I've been raised in a Christian environment. Probably when I was, I guess it was around 11 or 12, made a public profession of that faith in a church setting and in a baptism, but been pretty much raised in Christian standards and values, and since that point in time have examined individually and personally and found reasons for adhering to those values, not just because I was taught those values, but because intellectually, culturally, spiritually, everything else, they make sense.
So you were raised that way, but you reached a point where you really investigated it for yourself and it really clicked true.
That's exactly right. I don't need to stand on somebody else's shoulders with what I believe. And that's not just spiritually, that's politically, that's everything else.
Would you agree, David, that the idea of somebody being religious and intelligent almost seems like a contradiction to the society we live in today?
It does, and a lot of that has been self-inflicted. We certainly had a lot of folks in the 20s and 30s that were very vocal about, well, you know, Christians don't need to get an education, educational corrupt and whatever. And it's not education that corrupts, it's philosophy that corrupts. I mean, you can, education itself is kind of like a car. It has no intrinsic value. It just takes on the nature of whoever's behind the wheel.
Yeah, and there is a difference between information and the wisdom to use that information for
That's
sure.
That's exactly right. I mean, the scripture is really pro-knowledge, and it advocates and encourages us to pursue knowledge and seek knowledge and retain knowledge and acquire knowledge. And then with knowledge, if you'll take that knowledge and apply understanding to the knowledge, then you end up with wisdom. And so the Bible is huge pro-knowledge. And if you want to say that's pro-education, I'm willing to do that. It just, again, depends on what you indoctrinate with and what you include it with.
Well, I'm a Bible apologist, and I've found that most of the people who put the Bible down have never even read it. Now, you're an apologist for our Constitution. Would you say that the same is true, even though it only takes probably under a half hour to read the Constitution? Would you agree that people are saying things about the Constitution today without having actually read what it says?
Yeah, that's unquestionable. As a matter of fact, I speak at law schools frequently. I speak in constitutional law classes, and I have not yet found I know of one law professor that makes his constitutional law class read the Constitution. And you know what a novel idea. You're going to have constitutional law, and why not read that document? Most folks don't. Most attorneys don't. I have spoken with a number of judges who have not. They simply regurgitate what they learned in law school and what they were taught by their teachers, which, of course, is an interesting phenomenon. You go back to Luke 6:40, the scripture says every student, when he's fully instructed, will be like his teacher.
Yeah, well, hang with us over the break, David. We want to talk to you again. Our fascinating guest, David Barton, is here to talk about the original intentions of our forefathers. If you have a question, it's 1-800-556-1210. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
This is KPRZ.
KPRZ.
1210 AM, a service of Salem Communications Corporation.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having a website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text, then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
If you like to talk to tomatoes, we got a show for you.
VeggieTales Rockin' Tour Live, Saturday, August 27th, 3 p.m., live on stage at Cox Arena. Don't miss this opportunity for your children to sing, dance, and laugh with Bob and Larry live on stage. Join Bob and Larry and some of their closest friends as they perform their greatest hits in concert. Presents VeggieTales is coming to rock your town.
Everybody's got a water buffalo.
Something so silly.
with surprise guests, lots of silliness, and all of your favorite veggie songs. Saturday, August 27th, 3 p.m. at Cox Arena. Tickets are on sale this Monday morning at 10 at the box office, Ticketmaster, at HOV.com, or charge at 619-220-TIXS. Group discounts available. Please call 619-671-3520 for more info. Produced by House of Blues Concerts.
We sometimes think locust plagues are something that happened only during biblical times. But in North and West Africa, locust infestation is happening today. And it's just as serious. Hi, this is David Harms with World Vision. And in countries like Mauritania, Chad, and Senegal, entire crops have been wiped out, leaving impoverished farmers with little hope. Experts say more than 1 million people could be affected by the famine that's caused by these locusts. Well, World Vision is helping farmers plant crops like potatoes and other tubers which are protected from these kinds of plagues. Things like teaching these techniques to the family is what you provide when you sponsor a child through World Vision for only $30 per month. The need for food security in North and West Africa is now, and you can help.
If you'd like to sponsor a World Vision child, call KPRZ today at 1-800-873-1210. That's 800-873-1210.
KPRZ San Diego and worldwide at kprz.com.
AJ and Jill have seven kids. That's right, seven. They are deeply involved in the music ministry at church, and until this spring, both have had to carry full-time jobs to support their family. Today, they are working from home, spending more time than ever with the kids, and experiencing financial freedom for the first time in their lives. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? I'm Andy Willoughby with the Three-Step Plan Home Business System. AJ and Jill started a home business using the Three-Step Plan. After just a few months, Jill was finally able to be a stay-at-home mom. No more daycare, no more working all day at a job and then coming home to housework at night. For information, go to 3stepplan.com or call 800-895-6545. A few months later, AJ joined Jill at home, and now they work the 3-step plan together. More time for family, less worries about money. To find out how you can make more money working from home, go to 3stepplan.com or call 800-895-6545.
KPRZ.
We're back. Listening to the Bob Siegel Show. Our very special guest today, the president and founder of Wall Builders, David Barton, and we're discussing Christianity in the public arena, in the political arena. David, what got you interested in the original writings and intentions of our forefathers? Hello, David? Okay, David does not seem to be here right now. David, are you there? Okay, Paul, maybe you can check and find out what happened to David here. Well, we're always prepared for a time like this, so we do have some email questions, and I'll take one until Paul tells me that David's back on the line. Here's a question that was submitted to me. How can a scientific mind accept the miracles of the Bible? It's a very good question, and I think I have a very good answer. Oh, David is back online, so we'll have my very good answer to miracles later. How you doing, David?
Doing well. Sorry about that.
No problem whatsoever. That's the radio business. I was asking you how you got interested in the original writings and intentions of our forefathers.
You know, one of the ways that I got interested was really, I would have to call it providential because it was nothing I ever planned on doing. I was into math and science, not into history whatsoever. And in the process of my math and science work, one of the tasks we had, we chose as a task was to see if we could correlate governmental statistics on removing certain societal values with consequences in society, which specifically meant that we would look at Supreme Court decisions, and if the court said, well, you can't teach things like premarital sexual abstinence, we said, all right, do teen pregnancies go up? In the midst of doing that, we read Supreme Court cases where that the court kept quoting the Founding Fathers, said, now, the reason we can't do this or let you see the Ten Commandments or whatever is the Founders didn't want it, and I bought that. That's what I'd always been taught. But as I was reading through, it's kind of like just an interesting thought. I said, you know, if the Founders are so opposed to all these things, why didn't they stop it 200 years ago? Why wait 180 years to start declaring what they were doing unconstitutional? I thought, good question. So I went to the law library in Fort Worth, Tarrant County Law Library. I read original Supreme Court decisions from 1789. The guys on the court had written the Constitution. I read them saying unanimous decisions like, you have to keep the Bible in schools if it's a government-funded school. I'm going, wait a minute, that doesn't, I've been told just the opposite. And so I'm seeing signers of the Constitution looking at the same issues, giving opposite decisions. Once that started, then I started looking for their original writings, and we today have a collection of over 70,000 documents from before 1812. So I literally own tens of thousands of their handwritten documents.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, you're saying then that there was a decision from an earlier Supreme Court which said that they have to teach the Bible if it's a government-funded school?
Yeah, a decision by called Vidal versus Girard's Executors, 1844, in which you had the city of Philadelphia running a school, a city-run school, funded, operated, etc., and that school was not going to allow any ministers on campus. And Daniel Webster, defender of the Constitution, argued, said, no, wait a minute, if you can't have ministers on campus, what you're doing is saying you don't want religious instruction for these kids. So when it was argued at the Supreme Court on February the 10th, 1844, in a unanimous decision, the court came back and said, look, if this school doesn't want to teach religion and doesn't want to teach the Bible, that's fine. It can go be a private school. But if it's going to keep being run by the government, if it's going to be a government school, you got to teach the Bible. We're not going to fund a school that won't teach the Bible.
This is amazing. This is just the opposite of what we hear today.
Exactly.
Today we hear go to the private school if you want to teach the Bible.
That's right. And see, that's what's striking is we always did this in public school. The first public school law in America was passed 1642. It was passed specifically for the purpose of teaching young people to be able to know the scriptures. And that was not just for a spiritual reason only. It was also because so much of our civil law was scripturally based. They believed that the best corrective for atrocities was actually knowledge of the scriptures, because as they looked to Europe where they had been, so many atrocities occurred from top-heavy government, whether it was church or state, and because the people did not know the scriptures. So their leader said, oh, here's what the Bible wants you to do. Go kill someone in the name of Jesus. Use your sword. And they did that. I mean, that's why we had the Crusades, the Inquisition, all the atrocities. But when they started reading the scriptures for themselves, they said, whoa, that's not what God's word says.
That is an excellent point, because we always hear about the Crusades and the Inquisition as a very dark time in Christian history. But even though that was sanctioned by the Catholic Church, at least at that time in history, was not encouraging people to actually read what the Bible says.
No, and you remember it was Catholic priests that started the Reformation. It was Martin Luther, Catholic priest, who said,
yes,
guys, you
and so was John Calvin.
That's right, Calvin, the same thing. So the Reformation came from within the Catholic Church, which really had a great impact not only in the Catholic Church, but even leading to the birth of Protestantism. And the thing was, they had such a high illiteracy rate, and nobody read. And the more they read the scriptures, the more they saw how out of bounds they were. Now, you talk about something significant. The key major religious atrocity that you have in America is going to be the witch trials, no question about it. And in those witch trials, you had 21 people put to death in New England. But it's significant that the witch trials came to a grinding halt because of two Christian ministers who stood up and said, guys, this is not what the scripture says. And so those two ministers convinced the civil authorities that they needed to stop those witch trials because that's not what the scriptures taught. And significantly, at that same period of time, now that's a black eye on America, but I have to point out religion stopped that black eye. But what happened was, in that same period of time in Europe, you had 100,000 witches put to death by the church in Europe. So the greatest American religious atrocity, if you will, is 21 deaths. And Ben Franklin has a great quote. He said, if men are so wicked with religion, what would they be if without it? And so we have 21 deaths we can attribute to Christianity in America, and yet in the 20th century alone, we can attribute more than 100 million deaths to the hands of atheists, whether it's Stalin or Lenin or Pol Pot or whatever. So Christians aren't perfect, but my goodness, when you adhere to the principles of the Scripture, it does make a civilized society.
So they were the ones speaking out against the Salem witch hunt. And isn't it also true that our original abolitionists were, for the most part, Christian here in America?
Absolutely, and probably one of the most forceful spokesmen for the abolition movement would have been John Quincy Adams, as far as legislative voices go. Now, I mean, you actually have to start back. The civil rights movement, if you will, began in 1620, because in 1619, the first load of slaves came up the James River in Virginia, which that's where slavery was introduced. But at the same time, the next load of slaves came to the Puritans and the Pilgrims in Massachusetts. When they saw the slave ship, those Christian leaders turned around, freed every slave, and imprisoned the captain officers of the ship, said, we're not about to have slavery. So the abolition movement really began in New England just shortly after slavery was introduced into the southern colonies. So it's a 400-year-old civil rights movement, but it was led by Christians. And certainly out of the pulpit is where you must file the abolitionists, but in the civil arena, folks like John Quincy Adams, who's probably the most notable early abolitionist in Congress, continually quoted the scriptures to prove his points. And one of his famous speeches was given out of Luke 4, where that Jesus said, hey, the Spirit of the Lord's upon me because, and one of the things he said was, to set at liberty the captives. And John Quincy Adams said, how can anyone who claims to be a follower of Jesus not want to set at liberty the captives? And so it was really powerful stuff, even on the floor of Congress, but it went back to the scriptures.
It's absolutely amazing. Are you up for taking some calls?
Absolutely.
We've got some people that would love to ask you some questions here. And let's see, we'll start with Lise in El Cajon. Lise, you are on the Bob Siegel Show with David Barton.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You betcha.
I have a question for Mr. Barton about a wonderful quote I've been hearing on the radio over the last couple weeks. It's actually part of a commercial. Actually, first I'd like to thank you for your ministry, David, for setting the record straight about the Founding Fathers. I have three kids in public schools. And it's amazing what misconceptions are being imparted to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Public
Thanks,
schools, Liz. It's just really awful. So I'm so glad you're out there doing the work you're doing. My question has to do with a quote that I've been hearing, and there's a gentleman on the radio, and in the context of his commercial, he talks about a series of programs he puts on here in the area, and I believe he may actually use your wall builder's curriculum, but he, as an example of the misconceptions we have about the Founding Fathers, he gives a quote by George Washington that the slogan for the Revolutionary War was no king but King Jesus. And I found that absolutely fascinating. And I'm going to be teaching a class to some children at church on the 3rd of July. And I thought I would love to track down the context of that quote, if you happen to know it, that I could share with them, because I think that would be absolutely eye-opening to the kids at school, especially since that's not what they hear about.
Yeah, and tell me the line from the quote again.
It was, no king but King Jesus, and he gave it as an example of something that George Washington said in talking about, you know, kind of a slogan for the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, that actually does not go to George Washington. It is a slogan that attributes back to 1775 to a sermon that was given in Vermont by the Reverend Peter Powers.
Okay.
Now, it was picked up in Great Britain and repeated. And in Great Britain, the way the British told it, they said, man, you don't understand what's going on in America. You're not simply going to issue a king's decree and do this. And so at that same period, Great Britain said, if you ask an American who is his master, he'll tell you he has none but Jesus Christ. And so what happened was in the Vermont legislature, and it used to be common in America, the practice started in 1633, that we would preach sermons in the legislature to the legislators about their duty and responsibility as public lawmakers and public policy persons. And one was that if you're going to be a lawgiver here on earth, you need to recognize the sovereign lawgiver. And recognition of that fact goes through the form of civil government. And they would talk about civil government in the scriptures, that God really didn't want the divine right of kings. He wasn't into the divine right of kings, which, of course, Great Britain was. He sent the prophet Samuel to try to keep them from having a king, and they said, we still want it. And he said, look, here's what's going to happen to your property. Here's what happened to your family. Here's what happened to the military. And they still wanted a king. So the American position was God was not into the divine right of kings. His first form of government was Exodus 18:21. It was a Republican form of government. And so their belief was that government was given by God to the people, and if we were going to have a king, it would not be a human king. It would be God the king. And Peter Powers, in that sermon in 1775 in Vermont, said, no king but King Jesus. That is a short summary of a longer paragraph he gave. So that became known as the motto of the Revolution. I've never seen it tracked to Washington in any sense. He would have been the commander-in-chief, certainly. But that was a common phrase, and certainly that's the way the British interpreted that phrase, and that's the way they repeated it when they were talking about the fact that America was not going to be an easy, short revolution, because these people really did believe that the king didn't have any power, that no king but Jesus had power.
Okay, well, we'll talk about the king and his power when we return. Great call, Lise. Thank you so much for calling in. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
AM, KPRZ. Change your station.
Change your life.
AJ and Jill have 7 kids. That's right, 7. They are deeply involved in the music ministry at church, and until this spring, both have had to carry full-time jobs to support their family. Today, they are working from home, spending more time than ever with the kids, and experiencing financial freedom for the first time in their lives. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? I'm Andy Willoughby with the 3-Step Plan Home Business System. AJ and Jill started a home business using the 3-Step Plan. After just a few months, Jill was finally able to be a stay-at-home mom. No more daycare, no more working all day at a job and then coming home to housework at night. For information, go to 3stepplan.com or call 800-895-6545. A few months later, AJ joined Jill at home, and now they work the 3-Step Plan together. More time for family, less worries about money. To find out how you can make more money working from home, go to 3stepplan.com or call 800-895-6545.
KPRZ, your full blast family station. 1210 AM, KPRZ.
We're back. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show. My very special guest today, David Barton. And are you back with us, Dave? Okay. We keep losing Dave for some reason. So I'm going to continue with what I had done before. We've got some email questions here. And I had started reading an email question that said, can a scientific mind accept the miracles of the Bible? We'll talk about miracles until we miraculously bring Mr. Barton back on the phone. I know that he had to call us from a cell phone today. And therein, of course, lies some of the problems. I don't know what we're all paying our cell phone companies, but you got to believe me, it's too much. How can a scientific mind accept the miracles of the Bible? Here's my response to that question. If the same number of eyewitnesses and historians who recorded the resurrection merely reported that a man named Jesus had started a revolution in 33 AD, nobody would doubt it. The incredible miracles associated with the resurrection understandably create tougher standards and greater skepticism. But here's the question. Are such special criteria fair, or do they instead close our minds to the witness of history? Think about it. If you're going to start by assuming that miracles are impossible, it will never matter to you how much evidence can be brought forth because all data will be immediately dismissed. An open mind ought not to assume that miracles are impossible. After all, when the Bible talks about miracles, it's not assuming that God waves his hands like a magician and throws natural law out the window. God is the author of life, is also the author of all scientific law. If science has taught us one lesson over the ages, it's that humankind frequently learns to do things previous generations would have thought impossible. Imagine somebody in 70 AD looking at a television set or a telephone or a computer. Imagine their expressions if they could watch a rocket blast off and land on the moon, or if they could see a jet touch down on the runway. To them, such technology would appear very miraculous indeed. Obvious to us, those are not miracles, but rather a harnessing of scientific knowledge previous generations had not yet discovered. So God is not being anti-science. He is doing with miracles science that we just do not know yet. And I understand, David, you're back with us on the phone.
I am, Bob. Sorry about that.
I'm having a little trouble with the cell phone today, probably, I imagine.
Yeah, we keep dropping the time.
Okay. Sorry. Well, we have a surprise for you, a good friend of yours who lives here in San Diego. Bob McClellan is here. And, Bob, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with David Barton.
Hello. Hey, Bob, how are you, bro?
I'm doing just fine.
Good.
Yeah, that lady that called in from El Cajon, you know, I happen to be on the El Cajon City Council still, and we're running your videos on the El Cajon Government Access Channel. So if she'd like
bless
to
your heart. In. Thanks for educating others. That's great.
Yeah, if she'd like to watch those, they're on Monday morning from 10 to 11, 8 to 9 at night, and then Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning, 8 to 9 at night, and Saturday from 10 to 12, 3 to 5, and 8 to 9 at night. So we're running them that many times during the week.
Now, David, wow. You and Bob, I know, have done some work together. What have the two of you been doing together?
Well, you know, our relationship goes back a number of years, and Bob has been in city government there for a long time, and he has the same vision to educate other folks as to our heritage and our history. And so here's a great example of a guy with the faith and the values that is involved in the civil arena that has a positive effect on that. And so we have common goals and common visions, and we go back, man, I don't know how many years, 12, 15, something of the sort.
15 years now.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, Bob, would you like to ask David a question here over the air?
Well, I know that some of the current problems that we have in our nation is this election of judges, and maybe David could comment on what's going on there, why this compromise was made by the senators, and what he thinks might be the final outcome, because obviously they aren't going to approve all of the current Supreme Court or the current justices that were up for appointment. And what's going to happen when those that aren't haven't agreed to be appointed? What are they going to do about those?
Yeah, judges have become a problem. They weren't so much a problem when we seemed to have a common cultural worldview. There was a time 40 years ago that you know, you may be an atheist and that's fine, but you still embraced what we would call Judeo-Christian values. I mean, you still held adamantly. You didn't have trouble with Ten Commandments because you too believe that we shouldn't steal and kill and lie. But we've really developed into two cultures now, two sets of values, and that's been very evident. The discussion we've heard in the last two presidential elections, what type of constitution do you want? If you read the U.S. Supreme Court website right now, they say that they're in charge of keeping a living constitution. And a living constitution simply means that we will tell the people how it needs to evolve. The founding fathers adamantly believed that the constitution should evolve, if we want to use that word, which is why they gave us Article 5. When we, the people, want to see something different, we change it. We've done that 27 times.
But isn't it true, David, that the Supreme Court was put there to enforce the Constitution rather than interpret it and tell us what
actually,
it means?
They were put there to interpret the law and not the Constitution. The difference was, and this is very clear in the Federalist Papers and elsewhere, is that policy is made by the other two branches. These guys will take it and say, was the law applied equitably? Was a jury seated in a proper way? Were the right facts looked at? But they didn't have the right to go in and say, oh, we don't like that law, let's do it this way. And so that is a brand new thing. As a matter of fact, this whole concept of the interpretation of law, the interpretation of the Constitution and striking down congressional laws, the first time the Supreme Court in its history struck down a law of Congress was in the Dred Scott decision, an abominable decision, and said, you know, we don't like the 1820 law passed by Congress, which said that African Americans are people. We think African Americans are property. So they struck down that law. They've done the same thing with marriage in states, but certainly on the life issue, they struck down state, like Texas's abortion law, and they said, we disagree with all that. We don't think life begins at conception. They've done the same with Lawrence v. Texas. So what we see in history is when the court has exercised its power to strike down a law and replace it with its own policy, subsequent generations have suffered. So this whole nonsense that the court is supposed to be the interpreter of the Constitution is a brand new doctrine historically. The Founding Fathers, the first time that we had a Supreme Court strike down a law of Congress, resulted in the impeachment of Supreme Court justices by the Founding Fathers who signed the Constitution. It was real clear to them, that's not the role of the court.
And wasn't it true that the first time during Marbury versus Madison where the Supreme Court instructed Jefferson to appoint somebody that he didn't really do it anyway? Wasn't Jefferson of the opinion that the court really didn't have the power to tell him what to do?
Well, you know, the court in its own decision to Marbury Madison said we don't have the power to enforce this. However, if we did have the power, we would enforce it. And so Jefferson called that a perversion of law, that they're trying to interfere with what the other branches do. And by the way, that decision, Marbury Madison, if it were delivered today, there is not a person on the far right or the far left that would accept that decision. And it was real simple. At the time it was given, you had John Adams, who was going out of power as the Federalist candidate. The anti-Federalist candidate had already been elected, and that was Jefferson. So the other party won. Well, the party going out of power at a midnight series of appointments created 16 new judicial positions and made 16 judicial appointments to fill those courts with their people. They just
okay.
lost the election, but they're dying gasps. We're going to fill these courts.
All right, you're listening to David Barton on the Bob Siegel Show. Hang with us over the break. And Bob McClellan, thank you so much for calling in.
You bet. Good talking to you, David.
You too, Bob.
Thank you.
KPRZ. San Diego.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Action!
What was my line again?
Does anyone care that we're over budget on this picture?
If you want value, Friday is Penny Saver Value Day at the San Diego County Fair.
Every Friday's Penny Saver Value Day at the San Diego County Fair with over $500 in discounts and savings. Save $2 on adult admission tickets at any Rouse. Tuesdays, kids 12 and under are free.
Opening day, June 10th, is Dollar Day. Buy your $1 ticket only at Rouse. Minimum purchase required.
That's a wrap.
No other San Diego radio station has more family programs than 1210 AM. KPRZ Radio.
Hi, this is Dick Drury with Kitchen and Bath Experts, your experts at designing and building your dream kitchen. Kitchen and Bath Experts is a full-service general contractor. We build your dream kitchen from design through all aspects of construction with quality you and your family will love.
You've heard Dick Drury's Kitchen and Bath Experts show Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. on KCBQ and KPRZ. Now attend his free kitchen design seminar on Saturday morning, June 25th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Check out their beautiful new 4,000 square foot showroom at 7475 Claremont Mesa Boulevard. Attend the Saturday morning kitchen design seminar and receive $500 off the design fee for your new kitchen. Learn about the important details of kitchen design, cabinet construction, doors, plumbing, flooring, and more. Seating is limited for this free kitchen design seminar June 25th at 9 a.m. Call 858-874-5800 now to reserve your space and receive your $500 discount. Call 858-874-5800. That's 858-874-5800.
California Contractors License number 350907.
This weekend, be sure that you and your family make plans to fellowship in a Bible-believing church. It's a time to encourage one another, participate in corporate worship, grow in your spiritual walk, and get refreshed and renewed. If you're looking for a church home, KPRZ encourages you to visit Tierra Santa Baptist Church, located on Santo Road in Santee. For a complete listing of other San Diego churches, visit KPRZ.com and click on Church Directory. Want to make a real difference in someone's life? Tell them about 1210 AM KPRZ. Talk radio you can trust.
And we're back. You're listening to The Siegel Show with my very special guest, David Barton. David Barton, welcome back.
Hey, Bob. And forgive me for going so long in that story, but in short, it turned out that when John Adams gave those commissions for judges to his Secretary of State to deliver, the Secretary of State was also serving simultaneously as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. John Marshall had both positions. He forgot to deliver the commissions. So as a Supreme Court Justice, he rules that they should have been delivered. He just covered his tail. We would call that a conflict of interest and ethics charges and everything else, and yet that is the case that people try to use today to say that the Supreme Court has the right to overturn the act of another branch of government.
Well, you are a voice that people need to hear, and please don't apologize for these great stories. The commercial breaks, of course, are hard breaks, so I hate interrupting
Absolutely.
You, but sometimes no problem. We have to. And let's take another phone call. Chris in El Cajon, you are on the Bob Siegel Show.
Hello?
Hey, Chris. Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show with David Barton.
Dave, I had two questions for you. Hello?
Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, sir. Fire away.
Yeah, okay. First of all, I also wanted to say I've been a big fan of your materials, and I've seen you on TV for a number of years, and I really respect what you do.
Thanks, bro.
Okay, my first question is, I used to think maybe school choice was the answer to the public school mess, and lately I've just seen the good things happening with homeschooling that I'm starting to wonder if it's realistic to fight the teachers' unions and try to correct their understanding of history and really fix up the public school system, and if Christians should really go for the ideal of pushing homeschooling. Because after all, I think our founding fathers were mostly homeschooled, and public school the idea of public school really didn't even start until many decades after the country got started.
Well, I would differ with you just a little bit, because the idea of public schools does go back to 1642.
Okay.
But the concept was that public schools should support family and basically, well, let me say it this way. The first federal law on public education was 1789. It required public schools to teach religion, morality, and knowledge in that order.
Okay.
So we've had seven different forms of education in the founding era. You had old schools and cotton schools and dame schools, and you had home schools. You had parochial schools. You had private schools. You had public schools. And educational choice was the way of the founding fathers.
Okay.
And there were four all those forms of education. Their bottom line is that we need educated citizens in the state, and we need them educated on religion, morality, and knowledge.
Uh-huh.
They believed those were the fundamental key things. So if you wanted to go to a Lutheran school and get Lutheran doctrine, fine. Well, that's as long as you get religion, morality, and knowledge, it's fine. If you want to go to another school, if you want to go to a Quaker school, so they were big school choice guys.
Okay.
And in that sense, they did have public education, and it's just that it didn't have the philosophy we have today.
Now, David, having said all that, isn't it true that our home schools are competing very well in national testing score averages, and aren't there organizations that are trying to get home schools outlawed because, oh, yeah, they're performing good academically, but they're not giving sensitivity training and they're not politically correct?
Right. Well, it is still a current plank in the NEA annual platform that they want homeschools done away with. They think it really kills the socialization of kids. And I really agree with them in a lot of ways, because if kids don't go to public schools, I mean, they're not going to know how to cuss. They're not going to know how to use condoms. They're not going to know how to use they'll miss all the socialization skills. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's their argument on the NEA thing, is that they miss socialization skills. Now, I would also differ with you in that they're doing a little better. They're absolutely clobbering public schools.
I was being nice and gracious when I said a little bit better. Yeah, they are.
Can I ask you one more question, Dave?
Let me hit this one thing real quick on home schools, because it is the fastest growing form of education in the nation, 20% per year growth rate. You have only 13% of homeschool parents who are certified teachers, and yet those kids, which means that we're looking at 6 out of 7 that don't have a certified teacher, they're receiving 2 to 4 grade levels higher than public schools on the identical test, and that's with uncertified teachers, which that throws that out the window. It's not certification that matters, it's knowledge that matters. So the one thing, Chris, that you raised earlier, school choice, I can't give up on school choice, because that's still where 88% of the nation's kids are.
Okay.
I've got to work at every level. I've got to work at home school and at Christian school and at public school, and I firmly believe that competition is good stuff. And I want to see competition not only in schools, but with my auto mechanics and with my football teams and everything else.
Okay.
So I'm going to keep working in all venues at the same time.
I see.
And it is so disingenuous, because at first people were saying, well, home schools, they're not getting as good of an education.
Yeah,
and then
right.
When they started beating them in test score averages, it turned to, well, yeah, they're getting an education, but they're not learning about gay rights. They're not taking a pro-choice position.
Right, they're not getting indoctrinated is what it means.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard just recently some spokespeople for the Democratic Party coming out and saying that people are getting indoctrinated in private schools, but they're unwilling to admit that there's any kind of agenda going on in the public schools.
Well, you know, it's interesting now, because we have just now come out with the report on the state of education in America. And when you look at things, what you're finding is that if you look at the NEA platform, there's a distinct absence of any type of academic emphasis. It is all indoctrination emphasis. You now look in the state of Massachusetts, there's a public school there that has lost 700 students in the last 2 years, because the number one purpose of math at that public school is to end racism. The number two purpose of math is to teach students calculations. So you spend most of math class on ending racism, you know, whatever that happens to mean in their minds. You have the same situation going across the country. We just had, California, great example. They had sensitivity training for a whole week in California. They had 81 different classes. 14 of those classes were anti-police. 32 of those classes were pro-gay rights. I mean, you have everything. There were only 4 out of 82 classes at that sensitivity training that would have even come close to what we would be considering mainstream American values. I just finished here a bill signing with our governor here in Texas, and it was a parental consent for abortion bill and a ban on same-sex marriage, and every newspaper in the state said that's part of the fringe religious right. Well, in the state of Texas, 81% supported that measure. So my question is, how is 81% part of the fringe, and that's really being?
I think we lost Chris there. But, you know, David, I have another question for you. People are expressing concern today about how Christians came out in force to reelect George Bush,
right,
as if something inappropriate took place. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I say, boy, are you a religious bigot. I mean, you don't have any trouble when any other citizen shows up, but let a person of faith show up and you think that's an abominable thing.
Well, yeah.
What kind of intolerance and bigotry is that? And that's a hard thing for the media to answer, because I've talked to a lot of media after the election, New York Times, right on down through National Public Radio, et cetera, and they just thought that that was abominable, that people of faith came out to vote. And it's like, I see, so you think that people of faith should not even have voting rights? I mean, that goes back into the 20s with the Jim Crow laws, and that's the same tone of bigotry that we saw there. And so I don't even worry about answering them. I make them answer themselves on why they're not bigots and why they're not intolerant and why they're not biased and prejudiced.
Well, with what's going on today, I'm just waiting for a bill to come out that says it should be against the law to vote if you're a Christian. That seems like the next step.
You know, the good news is that we finally woke up, and the great news is that under the constitutional system, whoever gets involved and brings the most numbers wins. And it's just that simple. And so we have shown up. I'll give a great example. In the last two election cycles, we've had an 82% increase in voter turnout since 2000. And what we've seen out of that is 19 new freshman U.S. senators, 15 of the 19 of which are pro-life, pro-faith, and pro-family. So that is, we're getting involved, 82% increase in 4 years. It's showing up in the people we're sending to Congress. The last two classes of freshmen we have sent to Congress, which is a total of 92 new freshmen in the House, two-thirds of them are pro-life, pro-faith, pro-family. So those guys aren't going to be passing laws that kick themselves out of the process. And the reason they're there is because people who hold values got involved and elected those people. So that's the best way to protect our rights, is to get involved in the system and send people there who hold our values.
Okay, can you hang with us for one more segment, Dave?
Absolutely.
And Chris, you're back with us, I believe?
Yes.
Got one of those 12 for a dollar phone kits that wasn't working too well? Hang with us over the break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
San Diego's family station. Remember, we're KPRZ, 1210 AM.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
If you suffer from acne or other blemish causing irritations and would like clear, smooth skin again, the next minute will change your life. Introducing Epiclear, the only acne relief formula on the market that is willing to let you try it before you buy it. That's right, Epiclear is so confident it will clear up your acne that we are willing to send you a bottle free so you can see it work its magic. This advanced skin treatment formula has been scientifically formulated to get rid of your pimples and help prevent future breakouts. If you're a teenager suffering with a constant embarrassment of bad skin, or an adult who wants the confidence back that comes with clear, beautiful skin, Epiclear is for you. Don't waste another minute. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-540-8479 for your free bottle of Epiclear. Over $70 value free. Again, call now while this promotion lasts. Call 1-800-540-8479. Please limit one order per household. Again, the number is 1-800-540-8479. That's 1-800-540-8479. Shipping and handling not included.
KPRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's family station.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
This is Bob Siegel, and I have my very special guest, David Barton, with me. David, we're down to our last segment, and we'll continue to talk to Chris, but because the time goes by very quickly, and as a result, we'll need to eventually end abruptly, let me thank you ahead of time right now. It was such an honor to have you on our program.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I certainly hope you'll come back again and that we can maybe even frequently hear from you from time to time. You're a voice of wisdom and knowledge unsurpassed by nobody in this issue as far as I'm concerned.
Well, bless your heart. I appreciate that, and I'd love to share anytime you want to.
Well, we'll sure take advantage of that. Okay, Chris, you said you had another question for David Barton.
Yes, please. I do also hope, Dave, that you come back to speak again. The last question I had was, as somebody that doesn't know anything about politics, but I was wondering if you had any words of encouragement to somebody that admires what you've done and maybe wants to follow in your footsteps with this cause or a related grassroots cause. I think I have a gift for public speaking and, you know, assimilating knowledge like you do, you know, teaching that knowledge. So if you had any words of encouragement, I'd really like to hear that.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that we got to get back into the civic process, period. And that's everything from media to politics to education to whatever it is. I mean, we should not have abdicated any arena. We're quite confident to work in any of those areas, intellectually, academically, and professionally.
Okay.
In the area of politics, one of the things that I think people are starting to understand is politics is not an event, it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And too often we look from election to election. I would love to see God-fearing folk get involved in partisan politics because I'm the second highest ranking political party official in the state of Texas.
Okay.
Now, as a result, that means I get to recruit candidates. I get to help fund those candidates. I get to help train those candidates. But it's a matter of knowing the system. You have to know your central committees. You have to know your rules. Everybody does it by the rules.
Okay.
But if you show up with more of your folks than they show up with more of their folks, then you get elected and you get to move on to the next level. And I would love to see it come to the point in time where all of our parties are fighting over who's got the most God-fearing candidate. But none of that's going to happen if we only wait and vote at the general elections or the primary elections.
Okay.
We've got to get deeper into the process, use the rules, and use the structure to start understanding policy as well as politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an encouragement I would give. And if you're articulate and want to go as a candidate, we have some really great schools that teach candidates. We have campaign schools for campaign managers. Maybe you want to run somebody's campaign. I mean, there's just a lot of things that are available out there. And if we look at this as a process rather than an event and say, you know, give me 10 years and I'm going to turn this valley around, or I'm going to turn this side of town around, or whatever, if we'll work at things in that direction, we will see some huge cultural shifts. And that'd probably be my encouragement to you.
What have you found that's the most effective political strategy that you use for your cause?
Well, it's always political strategies, you have to work from inside the system. It's very hard to do from outside the system. So pick yourself a party, read the party rules, find the party structure, start working within that party, and start bringing all your friends with you. Numbers matter.
Okay.
Go and get yourself elected to the Central Committee. Then from the Central Committee, move on up to congressional committees. And as you do, your power and influence grows, but if you'll use it for the right principles and keep those people involved, I mean, quite frankly, here in Texas, the Republican Party of Texas is the largest political convention in the world. We have 17,000 elected delegates, and our largest single event at our state Republican convention is our prayer rally. We have 4,500 people pay to come pray. You know, which tells you about the kind of people we've been able to get involved in the process. We produce presidents, we produce governors, we produce senators, and they come out of that field of candidates that we've worked on for years.
Okay.
Great question, Chris. I'm sure there's others out there that might want to consider themselves getting involved in politics. That is not something that has to be an antithesis to Christianity. David, in the short amount of time we have left, this phrase, separation between church and state, could you dispel the myth that phrase is not actually in our Constitution?
It does not appear in the Constitution. It does not appear in any writing surrounding it. The records of Congress are required by the Constitution to record everything said on the floor of the House and Congress. From June the 7th to September the 24th of 1789, 90 founding fathers from the First Amendment, not one of them used the phrase. It came in a letter 11 years later when Thomas Jefferson said that because of separation church and state, the government would not stop public religious activities. So the only time it's used in the founding era is to keep the government from stopping activities. Since 1947, the Supreme Court has not quoted that letter. They quote 8 words of it, a wall of separation between church and state, and they now use that letter to stop public religious activities, which is what Jefferson promised would not happen because of that phrase. But again, it's in no founding document. It is in no founding discussions. It is in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote January the 1st, 1802.
Yeah, now, what happened in 1947 in Everson versus the Board of Education? Because that phrase popped in, and it almost seemed out of context, didn't it?
It was out of context, but you're starting to talk about agendas at this point. We've gone through a period of legal positivism in America. We no longer believe in absolutes. We've moved into, well, there's several terms for it, but positivism is evolving law. And that came through people like Supreme Court Justices Benjamin Cardozo, Louis Brandeis, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. They were talking about evolving law. And so now we have Hugo Black on the court who writes the decision, who uses that phrase. And Philip Hamburger, who is a great intellectual out of University of Illinois Chicago Law School, points out that Hugo Black used that phrase as a Klan member and as a high-ranking Mason.
Amazing.
And that's a phrase that's common in both of those. So it's a pejorative. Separation of church and state has always been a pejorative in American life when used that way. And so here you have a guy with a philosophy who uses it, and now we use a racist, bigoted term as the reason that we don't allow religious expression.
Amazing. And then in 1962, Engel versus Vitale, what happened there? They kind of revived that statement at that time, didn't they?
Yeah, 62 is the first time they applied it to public policy. They said it in 47. They talked about it for 15 years.
Well, we'll have to hear more about that next time, David. We got to take off. Thank you so much for coming on.
Bless you, bro.
Okay. We'll see you next week, folks.
The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by ProBuild, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studio, WFS Electric Incorporated, and the Law Office.